The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Amateur Traveler, episode 741. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about fall colors and cherry blossoms, sushi and the Shinkansen, a castle, a gorge, and an exclusion zone, as we go to the region of Tohoku in Japan. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about Tohoku. I'd like to welcome to the show Sandra Thomas-Cominall, who is coming to us from the Behavior Economics in Marketing podcast and come to talk to us about Tohoku, Japan. Sandra, welcome to the show.
Thank you, and thank you for having me on.
Our podcasts don't necessarily overlap in terms of audience all that much, but it sounds interesting to me. What's your connection to Japan, first of all?
So I have a background in tourism marketing, and I've done a lot within Japan marketing.
Excellent. And can you put Tohoku on a map for us? I said Tohoku, Japan, but we're really talking about a region.
Yes. So Tohoku is a region in Japan that is north of Tokyo, but south of the uppermost island of Japan, Hokkaido. Mm-hmm. Tohoku is made up of 6 prefectures: Akita, Fukushima, Iwate, Miyagi, Yamagata, and Aomori.
And we should say you're not a native Japanese speaker.
Yes.
In case people were wondering at that point. Excellent. And why should someone go to Tohoku?
So Tohoku is a great destination for people who are looking to get off the beaten path without venturing too far from things of comfort. With that said, there is also something for everyone. There's outdoors, you have the ocean, the mountains, the lakes, you even have caves, you have world-class museums, you have the traditional culture like temples and tea houses, festivals, you have cherry blossoms without the high price.
Okay.
Not to mention that it is a foodie paradise. So many regions in Japan claim to have the best sushi, and I've tried sushi across Japan. And I would say that Tohoku has a stake in that claim. They might not be the best, but they're definitely one of the best. And then also they have a terrific regional cuisines that you must try while visiting. Another reason to visit Tohoku is that it is truly accessible in terms of infrastructure and language. There's a high-speed rail that stretches between Tokyo and Hokkaido, stopping in a few cities throughout Tohoku. Tokyo to Sendai by rail is roughly 1 hour, making Tohoku a perfect standalone destination or an add-on to almost any itinerary in Japan. And then, of course, while you're getting around Tohoku, besides the major cities, it can be a little bit of a challenge, but there is a multitude of options like local rail, buses, ferries, and not to mention renting a car or a car and driver. Just a brief note about renting a car in Japanese. They do drive on the other side of the road, which can be a challenge for Westerners, and travelers would need to have that international driver's license. And also, it's important to rent an English-speaking GPS prior to arrival, especially when you're looking at some of these kind of out of the high trafficked areas by Westerners. Mm-hmm. So, and if all of that's not convincing enough, Tohoku has also been recognized last year by National Geographic and Lonely Planet as the IT destination.
Okay, excellent. Well, what kind of itinerary are you going to recommend for us?
There's so much to do in Tohoku because it is an actual region and it stretches pretty far. But for a week-long trip, I would start off in the Aomori Prefecture with 2 nights in Towada. Towada is a mountainous retreat area, and it's a great place to slow down that pace from busy Tokyo if you just came from there, or from your busy non-vacation life. You would stay in a traditional ryokan, which is a Japanese inn, with an onsen hot springs. So a ryokan is a traditional Japanese inn. They're usually very beautiful buildings. They're run by Japanese families, often passed down from generations. You'll interact with a lot of Japanese tourists there, as well as the family. You get a full breakfast with them that's totally Japanese. The one thing that's really interesting about ryokan is that you don't get a Western bed in most of
that's
them.
That's where I want to make you sure we got there. Okay.
So you actually sleep on what they call a futon, but it's not necessarily the type of futon that Westerners think of. It's truly just a little mat on the floor with some bedding. And you actually make this futon up yourself in most ryokan. One kind of thing to note is that if you do have back issues or standing up is a difficult thing from the floor, that this might not be a great option for you. But if it's something that is a challenge, but it's okay, it's definitely one of those things that when you go to Japan, you need to at least try once.
Well, so I'm actually somebody who does have back issues, and I would disagree with you in the sense that for me, I need a firm mattress, and you can't get a whole lot more firm than a futon on top of your tatami mats on the floor, which is what you're going to get there. I'm much more dangerous at the Western hotel with the soggy bed. That's what I'm going to wake up with, back pain in the morning, but not so much here. And of course, the fact that it has an onsen quite often, which would be hot springs or hot baths, you know, hey, there you go.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was just going to say that the onsens are distinguished by minerals that are dissolved in the water, and each onsen offers different health benefits, but they're all supposed to be relaxing to your body, your mind. It's supposed to help with your back problems, absolutely. And that's definitely one of those things that when you go to Japan, you really should try an onsen. And they come in so many different varieties. There's indoors and outdoors. They're usually gender separated, but there are mixed ones. They often, well, they are nude bathing. So if that's something that's not comfortable for you, then you should be looking for the private onsens instead of the public ones.
Right. Excellent. Well, and while we're in that, in Towata, I think was the name of the place, what are we going to do besides... Yep. Sorry.
Okay. So now that you've gotten into your ryokan and you're relaxing, this is a nature-oriented area. So I would start off with hiking the Oirase Gorge to admire the vast array of waterfalls along the way and the variety of mosses. So I know this isn't necessarily something that's to everyone's like interest, but this area is known for its many kinds of mosses. And an interesting fact that out of the 12,000 species of moss that exists throughout the world, 2,500 can be found growing in Japan. And this area is actually known for having a lot of them.
Huh. So the, you know, I think that's a first. For the first time we have advertised a place based on the moss on Amateur Trail.
Right.
So what you're telling me though is it's a very green and wet space.
Oh yes, it's very green, very wet, very beautiful. The Oirase River runs through the gorge, flowing from Lake Towada to the Pacific Ocean. And the hike goes from the gorge part ending in Lake Towada. So I call this a hike because of its length and the fact that you're in nature, but it is relatively flat. It's not paved, but it's actually very well trodden to the point where it feels like you're walking on pavement.
Okay.
But it does take a 2.5 hours to walk the entire length. There are buses that run the entire length of it. And if you do have a driver guide, you can stop at the important places along the way. Regardless of whether you're driving, walking, or taking a bus, there is this really cute little store kind of halfway through it. Mm-hmm. It's just got a lot of different things there, including a local craft station where you take a hollowed out gourd and you poke holes in it and you create a lamp out of it. It's a great little souvenir to take home with you. You can also learn about the variety of mosses in the area. They actually have a greenhouse with each of the varieties of mosses and they will teach you about it. They give you a little magnifying glass so you can look in detail at each of the different ones to see the differences, and gives you a little bit more appreciation for moss.
And the store we're stopping at, would that happen to be the Moss Ball Workshop?
It is. It is. And lastly, at this store, you can buy some moss-flavored ice cream.
Would I want to buy some moss-flavored ice cream? You've had this, I assume.
So I wasn't able to actually get it because I was on a bus and I had left my purse in the bus.
Okay.
But... But everyone else who got it on our trip absolutely loved it. And one thing about Japan is it's known for its interesting flavors of ice cream. And each region or area has their own unique flavors. And most flavored, it might sound crazy, it's crazy, but it's absolutely not the craziest flavor you'll find in Japan.
And I'm curious, you can't say that without backing it up. What do you think is the craziest flavor of ice cream you have seen in Japan?
So I have not tried all of the craziest flavors. So you can find things like the miso, you can find squid ink, seaweed, soy sauce.
Okay, you have backed up your claim here. Okay.
Yeah.
You had me at squid ink.
So that's definitely something you want to try when you go to places, is kind of those crazy flavors, but definitely within your own sense of comfort. Okay, so at the end of the hike, you arrive at Lake Tawada. So Lake Tawada is actually a double caldera, which is a collapsed volcano that collapsed during eruption. And the volcano that created these calderas is actually still active. Because it is a caldera, a collapsed volcano, it actually is really deep, almost 1,000 feet deep, making it the third deepest lake in Japan. Because of the depth, the water is brilliant shades of blue. And I was there in the autumn, and it was just absolutely beautiful with the changing leaves reflecting in the lake. So what I would recommend is totally getting out on the lake. And there are a couple different options for that. There's one option, which is a tour boat, which is kind of like more like a ferry than anything. Like, it's not glamorous, but it does have a recording of a Japanese tour that kind of talks about all the different things that you're seeing and about the lake. Unfortunately, it is solely in Japanese.
Okay.
But it is still worth going on this tour boat because you get to see the lake from many different vantage points, and it is absolutely beautiful.
Excellent.
The other way to enjoy Lake Tawada is to go canoeing on the lake. And I did both of these, but this is the one that I would absolutely recommend. When I was there, though, it was extremely windy and there were waves, and it was a little nerve-wracking because of the depth of the lake. The tour guides for the canoeing trip were kind of afraid to bring us far into the lake just because of the depth of the lake and how wavy it was. But it was so, so beautiful. I mean, you have brilliant blue water that's fringed with the crimson and orange leaves of autumn, and it's absolutely just breathtaking.
Excellent.
So the other thing I would recommend in Tawada is the magnificent Tawada Art Center. So the Tawada Art Center is actually in Tawada City, which is about an hour drive from Lake Tawada. There is a bus that goes there, or you could drive it yourself or however you want to do it, but it's really worth the trip. The Tawada Art Center is great for modern art enthusiasts, as well as people who just don't love art. When I was there, our group leader, we were talking about it, and he said he didn't love art museums. And this was kind of like the down point of the itinerary for him. But walking away from it, he said how awesome the museum was and how much he really loved it. And that's the thing about this museum, is that it's great for people who are big fans of art museums, as well as the people who just don't love it. And I myself am a huge fan of art museums, and I've visited art museums throughout the world, but this has got to be one of my favorites. The Tawada Art Center has a permanent collection by world-renowned artists from Japan and abroad, including Yoko Ono and Kusama. Kusama is a famous Japanese contemporary artist. She's most known for her pumpkin in Naoshima, the art island of Japan.
Okay.
It's a very famous, recognizable piece of art. But the most striking features about the Tawada Art Center are the independent exhibition rooms that act as houses for art, with each room being its own installation. And to top that all off, most of the art is interactive. So one of my favorites was an installation by an artist named Takashi called Sumpfland, which in German means marshland. You walk into the room and you just see table and chairs, and you were like, did I walk into a meeting room? What's going on here? Is this part of it? And then you notice in the top of the ceiling that there is a hole, and that you have to climb on top of the table to be able to poke your head through the hole. But when you do, you're transported into a marshland. It's a diorama that's in the ceiling of this room of It's a marsh. You've got the trees and you've got animals. You've got mist rising from the water. It's absolutely amazing. And it's really, Takashi is all about talking about the concept of boundaries. And so it really is a fascinating take on that concept of boundaries. So while you're in the Aomori Prefecture, the area is really known for their apples. Visitors can go to farms and do apple picking. But even if you don't do that, you can try some of the many different apple-flavored goods that they have. They have everything from apple-flavored Kit Kat to apple handheld pies to apple curry and sparkling ciders. And a few interesting facts. The small town of Fujisaki is where the Fuji apple was first developed.
Okay.
And then also there's, if you are interested in taking an apple bath in a hot spring, literally with apples floating in it, that is also available in this area.
Okay.
For those interested, another regional dish is barayaki, and this is actually one of my favorite Japanese foods, and you'll find it in Tawada. And it's gaining in popularity. It's actually a newer dish and it's very trendy right now. The simple way to explain it is it's a beef and onion stir fry that you make at your table. Mm-hmm. You walk into the restaurant and you sit down with your group of people. There's a cooking element on your table and the cook actually brings out all the food and you and your friends, whoever you're traveling with, get to cook the meal right there at your table. So this is, it's actually a really great experience. It smells amazing as soon as you walk into the restaurant, and it is absolutely delicious. It really delivers that umami taste.
Okay.
So for those who don't know what umami is, it's Westerners generally consider four taste profiles, that's sweet, sour, salty, and bitter, whereas Japanese have recognized a fifth taste profile, umami, which is somewhat of a savory, glutinous taste that you will find in soy sauce or soups. And barayaki is a perfect way to experience umami. There are several restaurants in Tawada City that specialize in this dish, so you just pick one and you jump in.
Okay.
So from Tawada City, I would recommend jumping on the Shinkansen to Sendai.
So now you started us in the north and we're heading south.
Yes.
Okay.
And those who really want to splurge, upgrade to the Grand Class. This is kind of a step above the first class. And totally worth the extra price. Not only are the seats plush and comfortable, but the real treat is that you get a bento box and unlimited beverage services. And the bento boxes on Shinkansen are something really special, as they usually include the local cuisine. And as far as like the unlimited beverage services, this is where I got to really try several different flavors of the sparkling cider that they offer in this area. Yeah. So absolutely worth it, in my opinion. The ride from Tawada City to Sendai is actually pretty short. It's about an hour on the high-speed rail.
I was thinking when you said all you can drink, but it's not going to be that long.
Right. I mean, well, you can also take the Grand Class all the way from Tokyo to, I believe it goes all the way to Hokkaido on that. So if you really want an experience, then all you can drink on that type of ride would be a big deal. So Sendai is a cosmopolitan city that is well located and makes a great base to explore Sendai and the surrounding area.
Okay.
So in Sendai, you might want to visit the Aoba Castle, which has often been touted as the most beautiful in Japan. And then you will definitely see the Daikon Mitsuji Temple, which it's actually visible from everywhere in the city. It's a very large statue that you just, anywhere you are, you can see it. So it's definitely recognizable and at least worth a good view. There are also several parks and gardens in Sendai itself that are worth a visit. And then visitors to Sendai and Tohoku in the spring will love the longer than average cherry blossom season.
So cherry blossom season is April, May-ish.
Right. The great part about visiting Tohoku for cherry blossoms is that you don't get the big crowds and the very expensive pricing, the demand versus supply dictates that you would see in Kyoto.
Sure.
So it's a lot less expensive. There are crowds there, but they're not going to be as bad as in Kyoto. So it's definitely something that if you want to do cherry blossoms, but you don't like crowds, head to Tohoku. Sendai cherry blossoms are usually mid to late April.
Okay.
So also there are a lot of great day trips from Sendai. There's Cat Island, Fukushima, Shiogama, and Yamadera. This makes Sendai a great base for 3 to 4 nights of your trip. So starting off with Cat Island, Tashirajimo Island is a small isolated island located about 2 hours northeast of Sendai. It is a full day trip to go, especially when you're coordinating your ferry times. But if you love cats, this is a perfect destination to go.
Okay.
So in Japan's late Edo period, much of the island raised silkworms for their textiles, and the residents kept cats to chase away the mice.
Okay.
Over time, this cat population just left unneutered began to grow immensely, and this was exacerbated by the local belief that feeding cats will bring wealth and good fortune. At the same time, the human population has dwindled down to fewer than 100 residents, and as of today, the cat population outnumbers humans 6 to 1 on this very small Japanese island. So this is one of several cat islands in Japan, but it is the most famous and attracts visitors from Japan and around the world. That's a great day trip. Another good day trip is to visit Fukushima. Fukushima is an hour train ride from Sendai, and Fukushima has a little bit of a name to it.
Yes.
In 2011, Tohoku experienced a very large earthquake and a tsunami,
Right. Which
resulted in a nuclear accident. And Fukushima Prefecture is one of the most damaged areas affected by the disaster in Japan.
Right.
If you do go, I would recommend taking a tour with a company called Real Fukushima. This educational group tour explores today's Fukushima inside the exclusion zone to bring a deeper understanding of the nuclear disaster and its impact. As part of the tour, you will have access inside the current exclusion zone, as well as the surrounding towns where residents have only recently been allowed to return.
Well, let's pause there for a second. So exclusion zone is always one of those things you want to sort of highlight. So after the disaster, there was radiation, and there still is radiation in the area, although it has decreased. And the exclusion zone is a region where people are no longer allowed to live,
mm-hmm.
and can just visit, similar to if you were to go to Chernobyl area. So the fact that they still have a exclusion zone means that there is still residual radioactivity there and will be for, you know, more than our lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
You felt it was safe enough, although you wouldn't want to open up a B&B there, is what I'm hearing.
Yes. So, yeah, they actually give you a radiation meter
Okay. To
measure your accumulated levels of radiation while you're taking the tour.
Got it. You
will generally be exposed to about 5 microsieverts, which is actually relatively low compared to flying a plane or
Right. Getting
an X-ray.
Okay.
Yeah. So it is generally kind of safe. It is what people consider to be a transforming experience. And if this is something that is interesting, it's definitely worth the day trip from Sendai.
Okay. So, you know, I'm seeing that you get about 0.13 microsieverts per hour at Fukushima, according to their website. And the typical rate on a commercial airline is less than that, 0.003 microsieverts per hour. So more than an airline, but probably less than an X-ray.
Right. And I'm really considering that kind of flying to Japan type.
Sure.
Flying. So when you look at that, then it, the amount of time you spend on a plane versus the amount of time you would be there for the tour is,
it's still more. but yeah. Okay.
But still generally safe.
Okay.
The other place I would consider doing a day trip from Sendai is Yamadera. And Yamadera is actually one of my favorite destinations in the Tohoku region. It's easily reached within an hour and a half by train or car. It's truly worth the visit. It's in the Yamagata Prefecture, and the highlight of it is visiting the Yamadera Temple.
Okay.
Yamadera is a scenic temple that's located kind of high in the mountains. The temple grounds extend high up the steep mountainside, and
Okay. It's
1,000 steps to the top of the mountain. And they're actually stairs
Okay. That
you climb. And there's markers along the way, so you know what progress you're making.
Uh-huh.
And the views along the way are delightful, but it is at the top that the great views down into the valley are just simply breathtaking. The temple was founded over 1,000 years ago and has ties back to the famous haikuist Basho. The base of the mountain is actually located just about a 5-minute walk from the Yamadera train station, and there are just dozens of shops and restaurants to cater to the temple's many visitors. So when we went as a group, some people didn't want to climb up. They just went shopping. So if you're with a group and some people want to do the climb and some others don't, it still is a great day trip. I personally was like, I'll go as far up as I can go. And I ended up making it to the top, and I was so happy that I did.
It looks stunning.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's stunning. And it's definitely one of those moments. Okay, so another really great day trip from Sendai is Shiogama. Shiogama is a short half-hour train ride from Sendai and is a picturesque port town with a large shrine, Shiogama Shrine, and makes a great day trip from Sendai. You know, while you're in Shiogama, you might want to sample the sushi or visit the local sake brewery to sample some sake. The sake brewery actually does offer tours, but they are strictly in Japanese. So you might want to do it just to kind of see the process. But even if you don't want to do that, just doing the sake tasting is a great experience and one of those quintessential Japanese experiences. Alternatively to doing Shiogama as a day trip, you might just want to stop there on your way to Matsushima, as there is a tourist ferry that takes you from Shiogama to Matsushima. And this ferry offers that recorded tour guide, and it's actually in English as well as Japanese. And there are a lot of photo-worthy views throughout the ride, making a great way to get from point A to point B.
Well, and you say photo-worthy. What I'm seeing is karst formations, not quite as spectacular as Halong Bay, but of that type of rock sticking out of the bay. Okay.
Absolutely. Beautiful. Some of the pictures might not come out as beautiful as it is, but it is very, very beautiful throughout the entire journey.
Okay.
With that said, I would actually recommend that you end your Tohoku trip in Matsushima. Matsushima is made up of those 260 pine-covered small islands and is named one of the three views of Japan.
Okay. Interesting. Before you go on, apparently there are English tours available at the sake brewery. The Urakasumi Sake Brewery does have English tours available.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
Might be new.
Yeah. When I was there, they said they didn't offer it, but maybe having all those English tourists come through, they
you
might have said, okay,
this... them in advance. That's the trick.
That's great. Definitely would recommend that then. So the last few days in Matsushima are about relaxing, shopping, eating, spending time in the hot springs, visiting the spa, sipping tea, just taking that last couple days to just relax and enjoy the last few nights in Japan. So there are two sites I would recommend right in Matsushima. First is Kanrantai. This is an ancient tea house that was once used by feudal lords' wives, princesses, and envoys of the shogun. And it is overlooking the bay, making it an absolute delight to sit there and enjoy a nice cup of tea with a little sweet. Second, I would recommend, there's two temples that are right next to each other called Ensuin and Zuiganji. These two temples, so the Zuiganji temple is actually one of Tohoku's most famous temples.
Okay.
Visitors to Matsushima in the autumn will enjoy the illuminated leaves during a nighttime visit to the Ensuin temple.
Okay.
When I went to this illuminated leaves, it was just very beautiful. They had the leaves lit up and in all different colors, and you wound around the entire temple grounds, and you came out into a very still pond with the lit up leaves behind it just reflecting, and you really couldn't tell what was the reflection and what was real. It was just absolutely beautiful and definitely worth that view if you are there in the autumn.
Well, and what I'm seeing is that temple is in two different gardens. So is that where the illuminated leaves were?
Yes.
Okay. Excellent. And we should say, we've talked about this on other episodes we've done of Japan. We've jumped back and forth now a couple times from temple to shrine. And just for anyone who hasn't been listening for a long time or who doesn't know as much about Japan, one of the reasons that I try and make sure we use the right term for those is a temple would be Buddhist and a shrine would be Shinto. And those being the two dominant, it's not really correct to say that the dominant religions in Japan, because that sort of would give you the impression that somebody is Buddhist or Shinto, and Japan is more complicated than that, where people quite often will practice both. They'll practice Buddhism, for instance, for marriage and burial, and Shinto for everyday things like praying at a Shinto temple to do well on a test or something like that. So a little more complicated than it is in some regions to talk about two religions as if they were an either-or choice, where in Japan you might choose both.
Nice. So I also wanted to kind of mention a couple more of the regional cuisines in the Tohoku region. Mm-hmm. There's the Kirin Tampo. It's a traditional dish that ties to the Akita prefecture. This is a mashed up cooked rice molded onto a big cedar stick and glazed with a sweet miso.
Okay.
Then it's cooked over a grill or an open fire. It kind of okay. resembles like a mozzarella stick when it's done, but there's no cheese involved at all.
Okay.
It kind of looks like it. After it's cooked, you take the rice off the stick and you cut it into pieces. It's a very simple, but it's a tasty food. And you'll find it served accompanying a variety of other foods throughout the entire region. You'll even see it cut up and put into soup. So it's definitely something you're going to want to try. And if you're there eating food, you will end up seeing it.
I've never seen that outside that region. That's interesting.
Yeah, it's definitely very interesting. It's simple. It's very tasty. They say that origin has to do with woodcutters or hunters needing kind of a portable food to be able to take out and on their travels and be able to cook it and eat it right there. So that's kind of where they say the origin they think came from, but it's definitely a very interesting dish that you'll find in that area. Lastly, I wanted to talk about the Shojin Ryori. This isn't necessarily a regional dish. You can find it throughout Japan, but it's definitely something that you might want to try while there. It's a vegetarian cuisine. You can find it in several temples throughout Japan. So ryori is the word for cuisine in Japanese, while okay. shojin describes progressing in spiritual practice or those who devote themselves to this spiritual practice. So that means that shojin ryori roughly means a cuisine for devotees, or spiritual devotees. I had this cuisine at a place called Mount Hagoro, and I didn't really talk about Mount Hagoro in this itinerary because it is a little farther out there and you kind of need more than a week to fit it into your itinerary. But if you are really into nature and spiritual things, this is a really great experience. So Hagoro-san is considered sacred by followers of Japan's Shinto religion and of Yamabushi, which is an ancient Japanese tradition of mountain worship. Mm-hmm. The Yamabushi believe that to become spiritually enlightened, one must have a close relationship with nature over a long period of time. During their rigorous trainings in the mountains, Yamabushi monks ate anything edible that they could find for survival, such as nuts, roots, grasses, bamboo shoots, flowers, mushrooms, etc. And before long, they developed methods to preserve the mountain vegetables, such as salting, pickling, and sun-drying. And the Yamabushi Shojin Ryori is a highly developed cuisine made solely from items grown, found, etc. on the mountain. It is a fabulous meal. It sounds really simple, but it is anything but simple. It's absolutely, if you're in Japan and you get a chance to have a Shojin Ryori, I would definitely recommend it. I had mine served on the top of Mount Hagoro in a traditional ryokan. So it was a traditional old Japanese architecture building. The mountain was just beautiful. It was kind of rainy and misty that day, and it was just a really beautiful setting. There were 10 unique dishes served during the meal, and they were extremely unique. And all different varieties of flavors, and what they could do with simple ingredients was just amazing. My favorite part was the sesame tofu, and I'm not really a fan of tofu generally speaking, but this was just, it was creamy and nutty flavored, and it was just really, really delicious. This cuisine has been recognized by UNESCO as a cultural treasure. I think that it's definitely a once-in-a-lifetime experience to do that Yamabushi experience and climb Mount Hagoro, but it's not necessarily something you can fit into a week-long itinerary.
Okay. Well, and if you're interested in learning more about Yamabushi on an Amateur Traveler episode, you may recall that Sherry Ott, when she hiked the Kumanokoto Trail in Japan, hiked one day with a Yamabushi monk, and that's episode 672.
Nice. Yeah. And the Kumanokoto is probably the more famous place to be able to experience this.
Right. Excellent. Now that wraps up your itinerary is what I'm hearing.
Yes.
Excellent. Let's get to some of our wrap up questions then. If you're standing in the prettiest spot you've seen in Tohoku, where are you standing? What are you looking at?
Okay, so when I was in Matsushima, I was staying at a ryokan it was an open-air ryokan overlooking the bay. I got up early in the morning and watched the sunrise from this onsen and overlooking the bay, and it was just the most beautiful, breathtaking thing. And unfortunately, because cameras are not allowed in those onsen.
Well, I can understand why that would be the case.
I wasn't able to get a picture of it, but it was just, I have a mental picture, and definitely the most beautiful spot.
Excellent. Yeah, I'd have to say if we're doing nude bathing, I'm just as well glad that there is no cameras available. And you all would be glad if I was in the onsen. And one thing that makes you laugh and say only in Tohoku.
So one thing that strikes me as very different from home was that Yamabushi experience that you just don't see people dressed in that type of outfit and just blowing into a conch shell and that type of thing. The whole experience was very, very different than anything you would see in the United States.
Excellent. And if you had to summarize Tohoku in just three words, Sandra, what three words would you use?
Food, delicious, and beautiful. The trip that I took was very food-oriented, and it was the thing that sticks out the most to me, and it was just amazing food, but it was also very beautiful throughout the entire region.
Excellent. And our guest again has been Sandra Thomas-Commonall. And again, if you're interested in behavioral economics in marketing, she's got a podcast for you. So what do you talk about? Can you give us an example of an episode on behavioral economics in marketing?
Yes. So I take basic behavioral economics concepts, I break them down into ways that are easy to understand, and then I apply it to different marketing applications.
Okay.
So one of my most popular episodes that I've had was about the IKEA effect.
Okay. And the IKEA effect is how people put value on things that they help create. Like when you put together your IKEA furniture. Okay.
Right. So I applied it to how to build customer engagement with this IKEA effect so that the more that the customer is involved with the process, the more they will be loving your brand and buying more stuff and loving their final product.
Okay. And so the example from this episode would be if you put together your own moss gourd when you're in Tohoku, it's going to be more special to you than if you buy one off the shelf.
Right. Absolutely.
Excellent.
Perfect.
Well, thank you so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for Japan and specifically for Tohoku.
Well, thank you for having me.
In news of the community, first thank you to the patrons who help support the show, who I will be hanging out with the day this comes out. Looking forward to seeing you. Second, I heard from Tom, who wrote about the show we did recently about Slovenia, episode 656. And Tom said, Chris, a short note, an anecdote to say how very much my wife and I love your podcasts and how they interact with daily life. After 20 years, I finally convinced my wife to watch the Lord of the Rings trilogy, and last night was Fellowship of the Ring. While painting today and binging Amateur Traveler, a not uncommon thing today, including Slovenia, Istanbul, Porto, and Botswana. You referenced the Lord of the Rings Mines of Moria and the Balrog when describing the Skokjan Caves. You can just imagine my excitement playing that snippet for my wife from that episode. Slovenia has now been added to our ever-growing list, many of which were added after listening to your show. Keep up the great work, Tom. Thanks so much. That really warms my heart to hear that that description made any difference to you. And then I also heard from Timothy, and Timothy said, I've been listening to your podcast and I love them. I must say that I love the theme song to the show. I have listened to quite a few of the episodes and I really love the details you and your guests bring in, like the local food choices, the description of the sites, and even the stories behind them. Such a perfect way to feed our hunger to see the world, especially in this pandemic. I am with you, Timothy, and as this goes out, I'm trying to decide, in this pandemic, are we going to do the amateur traveler trip to Turkey this year? Because I put out a vote there and most people said, not so much, not so soon. So that may not happen this year. We may push off an amateur traveler trip yet another year. If you're interested in knowing how that voting is going, go to amateurtraveler.com/trips. And with that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.